Station number 11212, rail 7.
So I'll clear it, and then we'll start. Colonel R.B. Humphreys, Rail 7. Can you describe to me, Colonel, the duties and responsibilities of an orderly officer?
Yes, an orderly officer. The structure within a battalion was a captain of the week, and he had very few duties. That way, he only did it for a week. He was one of the captains. Then every day, there was a different orderly officer who was a subaltern. And if there was a subaltern who had done 12 years' service, like we had, I don't think he did orderly officer after about 10 years' service. Well, now, there were enough young subalterns and second lieutenants to go round, so it came round about every 10 days, like 10 days to perhaps a fortnight. We started off. Early start, went across to inspect the breakfast. You met the orderly sergeant there, and he and you went round the breakfast. You went round the tables asking the men whether the food was all right, and if it wasn't, investigating the complaint with the cookery staff. Then, having done that, you went, and they were towards the end of their breakfast. You went across and had your own breakfast in the officer's mess, and the sergeant went to the sergeant's mess. Then the next thing was you very likely appear for the mounting of the guard, and you had to inspect the guard. The sergeant of the orderly sergeant fell the guard in, and the guard. So the guard commander, who was a sergeant, and the headquarter guard, it might be, I think, six people, had one extra who, if he won, not him only, but I mean there was one extra. The one that won extra, won for the best turnout, became the stick man for the day at orderly room. That meant he didn't have to go on guard at night. And he really had rather an easy day because he sat in the ordinary room and ran round with a stick with his boots shining to hell and everything magnificent. But they had to be good because the sergeant of the guard looked at them first. Then I went up and looked at them. And you looked everywhere. You even made them bring their heels up and look underneath. So it was a high standard. But they liked doing it, I think. Especially when there was that reward there. And that meant if he got it, won it that time, he wouldn't be doing it another guard for perhaps 3 weeks. And if he won it three times, he got off guards for a whole month. Some did win it three times, they were good. And then the next thing was you were on hand. Not if you were called to go to the orderly room to stand and just wait while the CO had the orders from the company commanders who had remanded for the CO. Then you went back to your company very likely. Didn't mean to say you were off work for the rest of the day. The next thing would be really, I think, lunches. You went across, same procedure, orderly room, the orderly sergeant met you. You went round and you acted the same, you sorted out any difficulties. Then, in the afternoon, you had really no duties, unless there was something very special the adjutant had asked you to do, because it was games mostly. And then tea meal, you did it. In fact, you inspected all meals. That was neat, sort of high tea. And then in the evening, your first parade was the inspect the guard at 10 o'clock. They turned out at 10 o'clock. And that was the time when the guard turned out and you inspected them. By that time, you were in your... You didn't wear your mess kit when you wore the officer. You wore a blue patrol. Of course, you wore your ordinary uniform in the daytime. Then, at lights out, which was 11, you were just about. That's all. Then, any time during the night, by arrangement with the orderly sergeant, you would meet secretly. He'd come across the back of the mess, and he would set out any time. Might be 2 in the morning, might be 3 in the morning, might be, and you would go and you would visit the guard, and you'd go so as you weren't heard. I mean, you hadn't. It's rather torture to be a sloth, but still, there you are. And they turned out. You used to hear the sound of the guard shout, "Oh, and they'd all turn out. And those that had been off duty and just dozing on their beds, because of course they all slept in their boots and lot, turned out. And they fell in, and they were inspected, and then they fell out, and it wasn't laid down. You did it once a night. You could have done it twice. So it kept them on their toes till dawn, really. And that was it. You handed over at dawn to the next one, who started the same day again. That was an ordinary day's ordinary officer. But in the manoeuvres, I will tell you of a very amusing day's orderly officer, but I won't tell you now.
Can we go on to manoeuvres? Because obviously you'd be involved in some kind of training of that kind. This would be 1935, 36. What manoeuvres were you involved in?
Well, there were enormous army manoeuvres in September before I went to Hyde. I missed the Royal Review, which was King George V's Jubilee Review in Rushmore Arena, which was a shame because I was on the course down in Dorset. So did Bill Hutton. But that was a terrific thing. There were people carrying, Crackers May was carrying the colour. Crackers May carried the colour at the Royal Review. And there was it was like a royal tournament in Rushmore Arena. And every regiment in the whole of Southern Command marched past in order. Of course, we marched past last because we trotted past with the DCLI with our quick pair band. Anyhow, I missed that. And then the next thing was these manoeuvres, which started, I can't remember when, about the middle of September. And we marched from Blackdown to, by easy stages, to nearly to Chichester, to the outskirts of Chichester. And it was a two-day march, I think. Quite a long way, marching with your platoon. And all the carriers and things, because we were experimental, came behind. I mean, they could have sat on the carriers and come down. But no, we marched, get us fit. And except for the gentleman of the battalion, Colonel Norman, with his Hillman anti-tanks. And, of course, he went behind. He started about the day afterwards and came and caught us up. He was much a form of other subalterns. Not jealousy, but the lush people of the battalion. Anyhow, Jackie Churchill was CO. Didn't like horses, he didn't like ride. He had his horse led behind him, and he marched the whole way. He'd been in World War I, and he was as fit as a fiddle, and he marched the whole way, stopping see the back of the column was all right, and the adjutant, of course, he said, go and see. They're all doing it at the back. The second in command marched at the back, and all the company commanders had their horses, but they marched.
What pace were you marching at?
The slower pace when we were marching. We started off always from barracks with Van playing right mark and going hammers of hell. Then, of course, you couldn't keep that up. For after about the first mile, you went down to about 120, I expect. Not an extremely slow pace, not the guards, but about 120. And it's funny, because they're all little men, and like Bark, you'd think the big man, because I was tall, Miles Mason was 6 foot 6, it was really difficult. It wasn't fun and tough. It was just as easy for us as a little Jody with bandy legs. Anyhow, we a nice summer's night, lovely. It was nice weather, luckily, and a nice summer's night. We turned into an orchard about 3 fields off the road, where the quarter mile, the Harry Road, got all the bivouac up and all the tentage. Then there was lovely apple orchard next door and a farm. And this is the cathedral you could see in the distance. It wasn't called Michel Diva, I've forgotten what it was called. And Trundle Hill and the race course where we were going to operate to begin with. Right, we lay up for about 2 days there, in which time, unfortunately, the troops emptied an apple orchard next door, and the farmer was, he was very nice, actually. He said, oh, well, troops will be troops. The apples were dead ripe, and I don't know what they were, coxes or something. And it was preparations, it was work going on. But there was time to pop along with them. No, one didn't have a car. To pop along in one's trouble and see Chichester Cathedral, just going to Chichester. Then the manoeuvres started. And we moved out in our vehicles onto Trundle Hill, the on the race course. And we were a part of a force commanded by GOC and C, Aldershot Command, who was one of the most senior generals in the army. And his name was General Sir Robert, somebody, the Honourable Gaythorne Hardy. And he'd been a guardsman, and he was a rare old stickler. He was called by the troops, stop me and buy one. Because if he caught people not saluting him because he flashed by in his car, very old-fashioned cars, of course, he stopped and he gave the most ghastly rockets to officers and men. So he was always known as stop me and buy one. Now, he was on the list to be CIGS after Montgomery Massenberg, who had been a gunner, and he was due to retire. And the other one, he had his two divisions from Aldershot. There were two divisions in Aldershot, biggest command in England. And the other one was an old West Yorks, General somebody Devil. And he had Northern Command Division, an Eastern Command Division. And I think he was Eastern Command, that was his command. Right. They started somewhere, right in Oxfordshire, Berkshire, sort of part, around the southern part of Oxfordshire, Berkshire. And battle, approach marches, and it went on, and it went on. It was meant to go on for for five, I think a week. Anyhow, I was a very young officer with two machine guns, three machine guns, three sections, full of enthusiasm to beat what I thought would be a whole lot of soldiers from the other side coming towards me. Well, we took up positions about third day, having outmaneuvered at night and all kinds of things. And I remember there was a hill coming down, and I had a beautiful machine gun fire sweep. You know those bald Hampshire downs near Mitchell Beaver. What should happen? But early in the morning, all hell was let loose. There were bangs simulating an enormous barrage. And there were over the horizon. What should happen? But Humphreys saw, with his platoon on the ground, three sergeants carrying yellow flags, white flags, a real flag, of the Cameronians. And those were meant to be representing a company of the Cameronians. Well, I mean, I know I wasn't prepared for that at all. So I went on banging away with a flag with my machine gun. Up rode an umpire and said, you heard those bangs? That was an enormous barrage coming down on you. All imagination to me, I mean, until it hurt long after. And this is a platoon of the Cameronians that's broken through, and you haven't an earthly. So I started to argue. I said, but sir, he was a major in the staffs, I think. And he was on a horse. And I said, but sir, these are just ordinary. What? He said they represent a platoon. So there I was. He said, I'm sorry, you were the whole lot of you captured. There are a few dead and those have been captured. So there I was, out of the exercise after about 4 days. Well, throughout the day, apparently, this happened. The devil had done a very quick move at the night, and he'd swapped over one division to... And Gaythorne had he'd rather remained static and not taken the initiative. Next thing I heard was that Jackie Churchill, absolutely furious, was overrun at the battalion headquarters. Norman was tearing around and able to get away because he had anti-tank guns. He was firing at wooden guns, I think, static wooden guns. The other platoons, companies were slowly overrun throughout the day. But I was one of the forward ones, and the reserves, John Kirby and co, and the whole battalion was really put in the bag. And we weren't the only ones, because a lot of that force was put in the bag. Well, the powers be, the head boy, who was running it, who was the present CIG, and his staff, thought, well, this is no good. Gaythorne Hardy's lost the battle. Devil it will be. So they called it off about a day and a half, 2 days early. And then we waited, and we got together, and we assembled, and we marched off to Mitchell Lever to get into a camp for the night, join up again, and march back next... No, we were going back by transport next day. We got into a concentration area at Mitchell Lever, and it started to rain. And it was raining like nothing on earth by the time we got there. It had started to rain about 2:00. And it was really, really unpleasant, rather cold for September. And so the Brigadier Harry Lowe asked the colonel whether he would authorise a rum ration. And he did. I happened to have been company commander that orderly officer that day, because when you were on manoeuvres, there's still an orderly officer. Not he could do much because he was fighting with his platoon. Men were sleeping under the open sky under a ground sheet, and blankets were brought up, just a couple, I think. And my one job was to go around with Harry Lowe to test the rum. The quartermaster issued it, and the orderly officer tested the strength of it. Not that I knew much about rum. Anyhow, Harry was, after all, by that time he'd had 20 or 30 years service, and he'd been quartermaster for about 15 years. And he said, "That's all right. That's all right." So we went round, and I just stood there while his minions dished out rum to everybody. Some didn't take it. If they didn't want it, they didn't take it. But most of them took it. Great alacrity, and slept like logs, because we'd had a tough day. Very tough day. About four tough days. Then, next morning, it's dawn, luckily bright and clear, and we motored back to Blacktown.
Colonel Lowe, he was a colonel.
He wasn't then. He was major then, and he just got the OBE for being for the Ravensworth Tattoo and wonderful long service as a quartermaster. I was there when he was a colonel. I'll tell you the story about
that. It seems a high rank for the quartermaster of a battalion.
Well, not major. He used to go up, if they had a long time, he went up to major. But colonel, he was, when he was made in China, there were only five in the whole of the army. Three at the war office, one other, some other regiment, and him. And I'll tell you a story about that, but I think it ought to come in the China context.
So after the manoeuvres, where do we go from there?
Well, I worked for Hyde. And one had about a week, the battalion sort of light duties. It didn't go on leave, light duties for about a week and conferences. As I say, for me, second lieutenant, I was just there with the others, sitting goggle-eyed at Wavell, because I thought he was a wonderful chap. And Maitland Wilson took the first conferences, and then Wavell came along and took the other big conferences, because it was the whole brigade, four battalion brigade. And it was in a hall in Deepcote, big hall, and old Wavell with his one eye looked a very forbidding old boy. And of course, he's brilliantly clever. He was a Winchester scholar, and he was more of an academic than a general, really.
Had he a reputation at this time?
Oh, yes, Black Watch. He'd had a big reputation. He got this one son, dear old Lady Wavell, who only died. 90 the other day. Went round living in London. And then there was Maitland Wilson, had a nice wife. Didn't ask people like me out much. Didn't get down brigadier, didn't. Brigadier raid cocktail parties, the senior subalterns went. Not the first join. I mean, I had a year service, you see. Hadn't got a year service. And then I started working for Hyde, and Hyde started in November. I moved down in my little car. I had a bit of leave before that. I had a week leave, and with my dog, and on the way, the dog, I went for a pee in a wood, and the dog jumped out of the window straight under a car. Dear old parson going, in those days he only went about 30 miles an hour, and couldn't avoid it. When I came back, he was shattered. There was the dog lying in the middle of the road, obviously dead. So I took it along, it wasn't quite dead, to the vet. He pronounced it, you have to put it down, which shattered me. And I said to the old parson, I said, don't worry, because it wasn't your fault. I mean, That's taught me. Always shut the window, you see. I'd left the window of my own window down, got out, walked round the car. Of course, it jumped up on the roadside. Anyhow, I got to Hythe, 6 weeks course. Month. 5 weeks, I think. Musketry. People from all regiments, a lot of them from Sandhurst, who had been with me, some from the term before at Sandhurst, some from the term afterwards. And we had a special course because we studied a thing called a ZGB. We, Experimental Brigade, just had our own little course. The officer and the other ranks who were on it. And so we were rather elite. And the people, other people on the course, rifle regiments, just studying the rifle, machine gun, the mortar. In fact, every sort of platoon weapon.
You said the ZGB was the forerunner of the Bren, came just before the Bren. Did it look like the Bren? Was it
check gun? Well, very like the Bren. It divided into four bits, and the Bren had refinements put on it later. But the ZGB is very like the Bren. We fired it, and it was only, I think it's only just finished its trials. And of course the instructors there, the officers generally shooting fanatics. I mean, they very likely finish a major, but they are nothing but Tom Reynolds' father was one. Nothing but people who work their way up, good shots, and they're technical people, a lot of them. And the edge was an ordinary line soldier, and the commandant had been a technical chap. He was a brigadier. And then we were organized on a sort of platoon basis. And as I say, we were a little while on it. And the NCOs did that. NCO's duties, and I don't think they did. There was no orderly officer there. That was all done by the instructors, or sergeants, and orderly officers.
And the whole time you were there, you were working with this gun?
Well, this gun and other weapons. So, well, we didn't neglect the rifle. We did a hell of a lot with the rifle, and we did a hell of a lot with the mortar, and we did the grenade and everything. We went down on Romney marches to fire. The rangers were down and we fired. But we were concentrating on this gun because it was our main weapon, machine gun.
Why did this gun fail and the Bren come in?
I don't know. I think it was just a evolution of time. We've started producing the Bren as a copy from the Czech. But this Czech gun was the original. They were the people who invented it. And then, after that, one passed out. We passed out all right. Nothing very... we didn't get D's or anything. I was there with another two officers in my region, and there was always a rag at the end of the term, and the richer guards, officers and people who had aeroplanes, had aeroplanes with loo paper and flew over at lunchtime, so as they got the edge and this RSF walking across, and the whole of the mess was square was covered with newspaper. That was the sort of main thing when I was there. But each term there was a different thing, and it was the Honourable Christopher Furness, Welsh Guards, and his three other Ridge Guards officers came over. His private plane, I think two planes, his plane and another one. And later he left the army just after leaving Hyde, he was in. He was Selma Lady Furness, son. He was wrapped up with the Prince of Wales' girlfriend, Selma Lady Furness. An American who married a Lord Furness, who was a relation of these Furnesses. Shipping. No, that was the money. Anyhow, he took a pack of hounds in Ireland, and he took a pack of hounds in England, and he hunted frantically. And then come Dunkirk, whatever war, he called up again, Welsh Guards, and he finished up being killed, getting a VC with the carriers in Normandy. Retreat.
After Hyde, you would return to the battalion. Was this getting near the time to go to India?
Yes.